The views on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. This is 91.7 FM WHUS Stores. I am Peddlin' Ron, and you are listening to Bicycle Talk from the couch with Fran. Yes. This is to be broadcast on August 30th, 2023 on WHUS 91.7 FM and WHUS.org. Welcome to Bicycle Talk with my friendly co-host, the lovely Dr. Fran Storch. If you're watching on Facebook Live, please feel free to comment down here below, and we will try to get back to you. Fran will probably get back to you. That's what will happen. Bicycle Talk is a show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, the upcoming news in cycling, bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you have a comment or you'd like to contribute information to the show, and you're watching right here on Facebook Live, you can just leave a comment down here below. Or you, if you're listening to this on audio file, you can simply send me an email at bicycletalk1@gmail.com. You can listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on WHUS.org, iTunes, Spotify, and now on my Bicycle Talk YouTube channel. Yay! What do you know? Ron's rant of the week. Anyone been watching the Vuelta? Vuelta España chaos. Crashes.
I was going to say, is it about crashing?
Oh, it's more than crashing. It's way more than crashing. No. It's crashes, tacks, fan videos determining the results, and the threat of snow. It's not been an easy weekend for the organizers. It's been a crazy first few days, and the carnage may not be over.
Carnage.
Yet. Carnage. That's what they call it. Carnage. It's all true. But of course, more of this in the show. We'll get to that. On a positive side, a quick reminder, once again, back to school. And here in Mansfield, we have a number of college students returning to the area, and lots of them ride bicycles. So keep your eyes open for those bicycles out there. Very, very important. You know what is a cool thing about the college students coming back, Fran?
No.
There's no traffic on the roads early in the morning.
Oh.
Because they're all still sleeping. Oh. It's great. Must be great to be a college student, be able to sleep in. Anyway, so just be careful of that. The next thing on the positive side, why I love bicycle racing and its athletes. Okay, so I talked earlier about the carnage at the Vuelta España and all the crashes. So Geraint Thomas went down pretty bad in the rain, and a bunch of people went down. Primoz Roglic went down. Everybody. It was just a mess. It was just a mess. It's raining. There's painted streets. It's ugly. It's what happens. But anyway, the comment is, and this is why I love bicycle racing, is, "I'm okay," Thomas said afterwards. Now, remember, Thomas rides for Ineos, okay? That's the team he rides for. It was all unfortunate fall on my knee, but luckily it's okay. Roglic and UAE fell right in front of me. The boys knew I had fallen, and they stayed with me. Different team, folks, different team. And then in they go. Anyway, I like bike racing. It's good. Another thing on the positive side, is the auto industry being disrupted? Yeah, the automobile industry is approaching a tipping point of disruption. With the driverless electric automobile taking shape, the connected car market is currently growing at a 5-year compounded annual growth rate of 45%, 10 times faster than the overall car market. What does this mean? It means that people are not buying new cars. What does this mean for cyclists? Hey, more space on the road for us. Yay. Let's hear it. Anyway, I don't think it'll be true.
They can't
afford
to buy new cars.
Well, there's that too. But it does mean that maybe, just maybe, there'll be less crowding on the streets. And there's more factors that contribute to that too, including the
urbanization. Yes.
People are going back into the cities, and they are ditching their cars when they go there, and the next thing you know, there's less cars. And the other thing is, there's a tremendous, and I'll get to this a little bit later in the show if I have time, there's a tremendous growth in e-bike happening right now in the United States and also all over the world. In Europe, it's phenomenally huge. It's like a people are really like they've jumped on hard on the e-bike craze. So anyway, as we move here, okay, and then the U.S. What's he here? The compared to 2021, the American auto industry's annual sales were down more than 1 million units, or 8%. There you go. Facts and figures. They can't go wrong. Okay, that's what it is. Mechanical Minute and cycling tips. Okay, last week I talked about my creaking bottom bracket and my creaking carbon frame, and I didn't get around to telling you how it all worked out. So I showed you last week on the show this nifty little bottom bracket, which kind of screws together. It's really nice. I got to say, the workmanship was wonderful. It's really nice. It didn't work. It didn't work. I put it in. It didn't work. I pressed the cups in with my press. I did all the right things, but it didn't work. And so, unfortunately, I'm still creaking. Is there a crack in the frame? Good question. Stay tuned for next week. I'll let you know what's going on. But all I know is when I'm climbing hills, out of the saddle, especially, more so, the creak is, it's going beyond annoying. So I have one other thing to check because something just didn't seem quite right this morning. And I will check that and see if that makes a difference. But that's what we're looking at right now. Anyway, another thing on the Mechanical Minute and cycling tips, paint, rain, and cycling. Why do I bring this up? I'll tell you why I bring this up. The Giro. Not the Giro. I keep calling the Vuelta the Giro because, you know, it's another Grand Tour bike race. No, Chris, I do not have too much power, but that was a nice comment. I appreciate the compliment, but I certainly don't have too much power. So, you know what I have is I have a plastic bike, and plastic bikes make noise. And whenever there's anything ever so remotely wrong, they make more noise. But my steel bike is quiet as a mouse. So I might just have to go back to the steel bike and put the plastic bike away for the summer and try to figure something else out. Unless anybody has any ideas out there, but I do need to investigate the frame for cracks because that's my suspicion right now. Is that I may have a crack down near the bottom bracket area or somewhere on the frame, which is making the sound resonate. But anyway, moving on, paint, rain, and cycling. Why do I bring this up? I bring this up because, oh my God, the wet roads in the Vuelta, unbelievable. Team time trials, entire teams going down, just crazy stuff. And you know, not to get down on the promoters, but we are going to get down on the promoters a little later in the show. The promoters, they started and finished in Barcelona. I think they're going to finish in Barcelona too, and I'm not real sure about that. But Barcelona is a little bit further north, and yeah. So it sits, actually, Fran went and looked it up last night because the subject came up, and Fran immediately dove into Professor Google and found out that they sit at the same latitude as we
Us.
Do, right here, up
yep.
in Connecticut.
Yep.
So primarily on the shore of Connecticut, so about 35 miles south of where we are right here, right now, somewhere around there. Anyway, so they get similar weather to what we get, and we've been getting some crazy, like, rain here, colder weather, which is unusual for this time of year. We're getting things that we don't normally have, so there we are. So they got a lot of rain the last couple of days, and the problem with Barcelona as being a starting point and a team time trial point and all that other wonderful stuff that goes along is when you get into a big city, what do you get? You get lots of traffic, lots of congestion. That's all alleviated for the race, right? They take that out. What they don't take out is all the paint on the road. And I'm talking about those big, huge turn arrows and the crosswalks and all the things that are really needed to function with pedestrians and cars and bicycles in city streets. Problem is, 30 miles an hour on a wet painted surface with your bike tipped over on an angle going around a corner is immediate disaster. It will take you out like you're riding on ice. So How to ride bicycle safely on wet roads or in the rain is my more of my subject here on the show here today, because this is not good. It's just not a good thing at all. So we got people that, you know, move to places like Seattle and they go, what do I do about this rain thing? Or they move to Portland, Oregon and they go, what do I do about this rain thing? Or they move to England. There's a place that it rains all the time. They got a lot of rain. And what do you do? So this comes off of a site which is known as Road Bike Rider. And Fred Matheny, who has been in the bicycle industry possibly as long as I've been in the bicycle world, he has a reply here. The main tactic for slick road riding is to do everything slowly and deliberately. On a wet road, tires lose traction much more easily when braking, cornering, or accelerating. To ride this way takes good anticipation. You need to plan for what's coming up so you can react unhurriedly rather than at the last moment. Here's what to do. Okay, and they've got a whole list here. Painted lines. They can be incredibly slippery when wet, especially if it's new paint. Be wary of any corner in town where crosswalks are present. Same goes for manhole covers and any other metal surfaces. Manhole covers, gas line covers, all sorts of fun things that are out there. So, yeah, you got to watch out for that kind of stuff. Basically, you got to be riding with a higher level of alert when you're riding in the rain. I think that's it. Fallen leaves. Now, this is a big thing because when you get a heavy rainstorm, it comes through often, quite often, the rain comes down so hard that it you know, actually prunes the trees. So you get leaves on the road, especially when you're riding here in New England, where we have this thing called fall. Why do they call it fall? Because the leaves fall. I think that's why you call it fall. But yeah. Anyway, the leaves fall, and they fall at record-breaking levels come fall. So as they change, they get weaker on the trees, and the trees are basically deflowered of all their leaves. And the next thing you know, you got leaves all over the roads, and man, you just got to be super careful about that. So you want to watch out for falling leaves. As you get closer to winter, low temps can mean there's actually an icy spot also. So again, as the weather changes, you got to keep your eyes open on that. Gravel, bad enough when it's dry, but wet, it can be like riding on ball bearings. Yeah, not good. I actually had a gravel experience this morning that I had to be super careful about because there's gravel on the roads. Why is there gravel on the roads? Because what happens here is we get these heavy dose rainstorms, ones that really come through, like the big thunderstorms come through, and they come through and drop 2 inches of rain in an hour. And when they do that, they wash out people's driveways and they wash right out onto the roads. And therefore, you have gravel on the roads. So there's a lot of places out there that there's gravel on the roads. Or it may not even be for someone's driveway. It just may be from the edge of the road. So you got to keep your eyes open for all of those challenges. Never grab the brakes while the bike is angled on a wet surface.
So deep rivers, actually, even with Barcelona.
Okay,
not deep Old river. Seabrook.
Okay, so that's 10 miles in, maybe not even
right.
5 miles in.
Yep.
Okay, it's still the coast. A braked wheel tends to go straight, so you can clamp the stoppers when cornering. If you could just stop, use your brakes before you hit the corner. That's kind of an old adage. That's an old car thing, too. You never apply your brakes into the turn. That's not a good idea. So no matter whether you have fancy disc brakes or not, it doesn't matter. You just don't want to do it in the turn. Speaking of braking, remember it takes several revolutions to wipe moisture from your rims. If you don't have disc brakes, anticipate a much longer stopping distance. Be ready to lighten your grip as soon as the pads grab. You could lock the wheels and skid. As for your road bike being less stable than your mountain bike, much of the difference can be based on tire size. Try fitting your road bike with the widest tires that your frame will accept. That's like 700 by 28C or greater, which is my personal preference, is to go to the wider tire right now. The wider tire has a bunch of other things, and we've talked about this on past episodes of Bicycle Talk, so everybody knows that I'm a big fan of the wide tires. They really, really do help. So anyway, those are the things you can do when the roads get wet. Yeah. So why is the paint so slippery? I'm just going to just tell you what's going on. When you put fresh paint down on the road, it's very non-porous. So what you end up having is water that is bubbling up on top of the paint. Plus the paint may be a petroleum-based product, which will end up adding an oily-ish kind of surface there too. It's just all bad. It's just all bad for so many reasons. And of course, if you wanted to use a paint that was more porous, you would have to paint the roads more often. So that's probably not economical for the highway departments to do that. So therefore, we have slippery when wet. And it gets real, real slippery. So you just got to just think like, I don't know how to put this. Think like if you're a snow driver. If you live in half of the country that has snow, then you think like, you know, it's a snowy, icy road. And even though it's just raining, I remember my sister, she moved to LA for a year. Her husband was going to grad school in LA, and they moved to LA for a year. And she said the drivers were out of control, insane during rainstorms, because they don't usually get rain. But there was enough oil, and we're going to go back in time to the time when cars, the behemoths, were spewing and leaking a lot more product onto the roads than they do now. Now they're a little tighter, but you still get oil surfaces on the road. You still get some leakage from the cars. And so add a little water and it's like ice. It's just what it is. So anyway, why would you start and finish a team time trial in a big city that has lots of painted roads, expecting that maybe there might be a chance for rain? Well, in defense of the promoters of the Vuelta, it's usually the rain mainly falls in the plain. What is it? What do they say?
The rain in Spain falls mainly in the plain.
There you go. That's what it is. In defense of them, it really, this is not a time of year that they get a lot of rain. So anyway, but they are now, and that's what happened, and that's that. So we move on in content. I have some listener feedback for Ron and Billy's Heart to Heart show from last week from a Peter Miller, who is, he's from this general area. He's up near the Connecticut-Massachusetts line, and he was able to listen to the show on Wednesday, which is when our recorded show comes out, especially the subject of open heart surgery. I'm 75 years old and had open heart surgery on July of 2011. I had a stroke temporarily, lost my eyesight. I slowly returned after several minutes, pretty scary, with no damage to his eyes. The cause was a leaky heart valve, blood not getting through, getting enough oxygen, causing slight blood clots. One clot temporarily blocked the veins that control my eyes. Anyway, 2 weeks later, he was on the surgery table. His heart valve was repaired. It's good that he doesn't have coronary heart disease. Did you ever think about a heart survivor ride? I have thought about a heart survivor ride. Billy and I have talked about that. I think that would be a fun thing. Anybody out there that's listening who is connected closely to the American Heart Association, talk to me, please. I'd love to do something like that. I'd love to promote something like that. That'd be fun. Or help promote. I do enough. I don't have to do any more. But if you know anybody who's interested in getting involved in that, I think a heart ride would be a great ride. You know, there's cancer rides. There's diabetes rides. There's all these different rides that are out there. Not as many heart rides. And I don't know why, because heart disease is the number one killer of both men and women here in the United States.
And can be helped by riding a bicycle.
And can be helped by riding a bicycle. And can be helped by you knowing your body when you do ride a bicycle, which is why I ended up in surgery for my heart condition. I didn't have a heart attack. I had an episode, I guess you would call it, of not being able to breathe. How did I know that I was having an episode? Because I ride a bike all the time. And it was definitely a big difference from what I'm used to.
You had dyspnea on exertion.
Okay, that too. That's probably what I had, whatever Fran just
it's
said.
It's definitely what you had. But you just said it.
Anyway,
you just said it in Greek.
She said it in Greek or in medical Greek. Mm. Anyway, my apologies to the Greek public out there. But anyway... yeah, I couldn't breathe, and it was an unusual couldn't breathe. I mean, yeah, you know what it's like. You're climbing a hill, you're gasping for air. It happens because you ride a bike, and the hill's big, and, you know, that happens. But when you can't get enough oxygen and you have to actually stop, you have to question what's going on there. Whereas when you normally had done a climb like that, you know, that wasn't an issue. So anyway, that's what forced me into that situation, and it was a really good thing because... they fixed me, and it's all operating really well now. I'm really, really psyched. I'm just in great shape at the moment, which is really cool, and that's a good thing. So anyway, a big shout out to Peter for this, and Peter also wanted to remind us that there is also in Brimfield, Massachusetts, there is a ride coming up, and it's close to where he lives in Staffordville, Connecticut. And it's a land conservation ride. And I will say that it is Sunday, September 17th, 2023. I'm going to shout it out for him. I've got information on that, and I'll go over it maybe as we get into our, you know, upcoming events towards the end of the show. So it's a good thing. He's also a forest landowner in Stafford, and he put a conservation easement on his family's forest land with several other landowners, and you can see it there. So he's got a link that goes to that. Anyway, we're part of a greenway going through Eastern Mass and Connecticut to the shore. Hopefully it will all be connected. Less cars, more rural. Yay, Peter. Good. Good, good, good. So thank you for reaching out, Peter, to the Heart Show, because that's kind of a cool thing that people were listening and relaying their stories. If you have a story that you would like to relay back to us, back to Billy and I, about your concerns with a heart situation you may have had and you're a cyclist, share them with us, please. We would love to hear more. We'd love to. So let's go on to the Vuelta. The good old Vuelta. Oh my goodness. So anyway, the Vuelta has turned into a really chaotic affair, I would say. It is it's just not it's not a pretty start. Not an easy, as it says here, not an easy weekend for the organizers. So I've got some interesting information in here about it, and this comes from Cycling Weekly, and it starts and I had actually said this through the in the introduction here. Vuelta España chaos, crashes, tacks, fan videos determining the results, and the threat of snow. So where does it all begin? Sounded like a wonderful idea. First, Vuelta a España having its Gran Salita in Barcelona, one of the most visited cities, world's most visited city. The opening weekend, however, is nothing but wonderful. Stage 1's opening team time trial was described as dangerous and ridiculous by defending champion Remco Evenepoel, who had to ride the 14.8 kilometers in near darkness while others... Rather riders complained about riding back to their team buses without lights on their bike and through busy traffic. Organizers, Unipublic, and ASO were hoping that stage 2 would pass off without incident, but all the wet weather worsened, and there were yet more talking points that had very little to do with the actual race that was won by Lotto's Andreas Kron. On the descent of the day's main climb, the Col de Estanales, about 15 riders suffered punctures with tacks apparently on the road. People, why? Why would you put tacks out in the middle of a bike race? What's the point? Is that fun? Is that amusing? Are you that ignorant? Or let's go beyond ignorance there. Are you that stupid? I'm going to call you out on that one. So anyway, Evenepoel and Geraint Thomas were among the victims. And as at the finish of the U18 Emirates, Juan Ayuso launched a scathing assessment of the perpetrators. See, I don't even have to say it because here it comes right from Bike Racer. It's been a pretty complicated day. I think there have been a lot of punctures, the 20-year-old and one of the favorites for the overall win said, in part because we have low pressure in our tires and therefore it's easier to puncture, but also because someone has decided to put tacks before a corner. I just want to say thank you to this person for being an idiot. I wish the same thing happens to him what he wished for us. I wish him worse. Quote, unquote. Shortly after the punctures, the rain returned, the 30 kilometers from the line, Thomas suffered his second incident of the day, crashing on a roundabout with fellow favorite Primoz Roglic of Jumbo Visma. Both mounted their bikes, caught the peloton again, but it capped off a stressful weekend for Thomas, who lost one of his key helpers, Laurence Desplus, to a crash in stage one. I'm okay, Thomas said afterwards. It was unfortunate to fall on my knee, but luckily it's okay. And again, Roglic in the UAE fell right in front of me. The boys knew I had fallen. That means that Jumbo and UAE had to be another team in there. They all rode in together. So that's a really cool thing. With the rain forcing the organizers to take the general classification at 9 kilometers to go. You know how sometimes they have that 3 kilometers to go because it's a big sprint stage. And so basically if anything happens and crashes after 3 kilometers, everybody gets the same finishing time. Happened at 9 kilometers on this race. 9. So that's unusual. That's definitely unusual. So anyway, here we go. Just before that, it appeared, however, that there was no official timekeeping at the top of Montjuïc, and video footage appeared on X, formerly known as Twitter, don't even ask, showing the race jury watching videos on smartphones of spectators to determine who claimed the 6, 4, and 2 second bonuses. You got to be kidding. So things may not improve on stage 3. That's happening today, by the way. And the race heads north into the Principality of Andorra and towards the summit finish of Arinsal. So just a few days ago, temperatures in the Pyrenees were approaching 40 degrees centigrade. But there has been a drastic change of weather in the Iberian Peninsula, and the temperatures have dropped to as much as 20 degrees, with snow even falling at the highest peaks. Why not? Why not? When the race rides up to Arinsal on Monday afternoon, the forecast predicts light rain and temperatures of 7 degrees Celsius. Strong winds, however, it may feel like 2 degrees Celsius. Some weather forecasters also are predicting the possibility of snow around 2,000 meters when the finish, with the finish topping out at just over 1,900 meters above sea level. It's been a crazy past day, few days. And as they said, the carnage may not be over yet.
Carnage.
Yes. Carnage. It's a beautiful thing, isn't it? Oh, my God. It's not really a beautiful thing. So anyway, the Vuelta is usually the big problem with the Vuelta, and I just heard this really interesting show on, it was on one of the NPR channels, and it was all about our local University of Connecticut and a testing lab that they're doing tests in conjunction with the U.S. government and with the NCAA and with the with athletes, and it's all about heat and heat exhaustion and what causes it, and they're doing tests on volunteers that are volunteering their time to like run on treadmills at extreme heat, and they're seeing just where you can continue to hydrate and be okay and when you just can't go there anymore. So it was a really interesting show, and if I can find it, I'm going to listen to it again because I think they have some great information there. Donating your body as an athlete to the University of Connecticut can be a really interesting and rewarding experience. I've done it a couple of times now, and it is fun because you get some great numbers out of it, but you will probably have to torture yourself to a certain degree because they're really looking for extremes in extreme conditions. This was done through the kinesiology department, I believe. So back to the Vuelta. The Vuelta is usually the extreme heat race. It's the one that just has ridiculous temperatures, and you know they're just baking in the hot sun, and you see a lot of riders fall back because of that. Seems like the Tour de France had a lot of that this year. So maybe the Vuelta will be saved from it. Don't count on it. Don't count on it. But anyway, the route is very interesting for the Vuelta. It's today's stage has a mountaintop finish, 1,900 meters. It's going to be maybe snowing, maybe not. We don't know. So anyway, it's just anything goes. I love bike racing, but I don't like too much drama in my bike racing. Today is hopefully going to be less drama. So I'll be reporting back on that next week. And as we follow the Vuelta along the way, because we have it right here and we can watch it on our TV, because bicycle racing has made it to TV here in the United States. Yeah, we waited for a long time, folks, but it's here. So we got four flat stages, two flat stages with high altitude finales, one of them, six hilly stages, seven mountain stages, one team time trial stage, which we're over already, and one individual time trial stage with two rest days. So it's quite a race, and we'll see what happens. Today's stage was stage three at 158.5 kilometers. And it is listed as mountain because of the mountaintop finish. The following stage tomorrow will be listed as hilly, and that's 185 kilometers. Another hilly stage for Wednesday, and then Thursday back to a mountain stage. So Friday they go back to the flats, and then the weekends it goes to Saturday and Sunday being mountain and hilly with a rest day on Monday. And that will be when we're back on the air again. So we will report as much as we can as to what has happened along the way. There are some great competitions here. There's great contenders. There's, you know, the winner of the Tour de France is there. And, you know, we'll see if Vingegaard is going to perform there well, or is he going to be riding for his teammate? And I think that the plan was for him to ride for his teammate. But hey, when you got two GC guys in the same race, anything can happen to either one of them, and the other could be given the responsibility. So we don't really know what's going to happen there. But it should be a very interesting race. And, you know, Jumbo is really, really looking forward to getting back the win at the Vuelta because they won it 3 years in a row, I believe. And so that's what's going on with the Vuelta. I'll stop now on that because that's enough of the Vuelta for now. I got some other fun stuff to check out here today. So let's go to, let's see, next thing on my list. So my morning commute of 8 miles this morning, mm-hmm. in the dark with lights everywhere, it included four cars today. Four cars in 8 miles. Not my record. My record was last week, three cars. That was the lowest I've ever seen. I usually see somewhere around 6 to 10 cars on my ride into the community center, teach my class. But this morning it was four, which was kind of cool. Two of them were on our road on the Bassett's Bridge Freeway.
Oh.
If they hadn't been there, then it would have been much less. But and then another one was coming down Hanks Hill Road. So another one going up Hanks Hill Road. But the guy going up Hanks Hill Road is one of the guys that takes my class. So I always know I'm going to see him there. So why am I bringing this up? Catalina Island in California. Do you know about that, Fran? Do you know anything about Catalina Highway?
I don't think so.
But for a sprinkling of golf carts, two-seater hatchbacks, and buses, Catalina Island is car-free and proud. Car-free.
No kidding.
Pedestrians only. Pedestrians, bicycles, golf carts. That's it. No cars. So this prompted me to take a look at this a little bit deeper because why not? Why not? Pedestrians only, 20 car-free places in America. Mm. Yes, there are places that you can live that don't have cars. So if you've had it with cars and you've had it with the fact that you want to ride your bike, but you don't want to deal with all the cars on the road, you can move to a place that just has no cars. What a neat idea, huh? Nice.
Are we moving there?
No, we are not moving there. We have few cars. I'm just going to say we have few cars. We don't have no cars. But we have few cars. And, you know, I got to ride on Saturday. I volunteered to be ride support, bicycle support for a running race.
RimaCon. Forgot to talk about RimaCon.
It's called RimaCon. So shout out to RimaCon, put on by the Hartford Marathon
Foundation. That's right.
And it is a relay race, a running relay race that starts in Lincoln, Rhode Island and ends in Hartford, Connecticut. It's over 90 miles of running. And most of the teams are six-person teams and they each do three legs. That's the way it usually works. And the legs vary in distance. I got one of the long legs, so my leg was 10 miles long, which means I had to go out and back a couple of times to be able to support the race. And my job was to stay with the front leaders and help in any way that I could with marshalling or whatever may be needed or communication or anything at all. So I kind of stayed up in the front and my friend Andre stayed in the back, but he also went back to the leg before my leg too and kind of rode back and forth there. And then he ended up following them all back in and I went back where he was and found the end of the race and rode back in with those guys. We had our local bike club, Thread City Cyclers, volunteered to help support this event. And we've been doing it for a number of years now. And so we had the lead rider, the person who was in at the very front of the race, we had him out there leading all the way, and he rode the entire distance. Mostly is on rail trail. There are some roads involved, but not a lot of roads whatsoever. So it's kind of cool because you're on a lot of trails. Unfortunately, some of the trails are, you know, a little rough in spots, but that's okay. You know, you use your gravel grinder, as everyone likes to call them now, or as I like to call them, my cross bike, and you use that as an off-road type vehicle that will have no problem on any of this because it's primarily flat. There's a few little steep climbs here and there, but it is primarily flat, which is kind of cool. It's great for the runners. It's great for us being bicycle support. It makes it really super easy for us to do. So big shout out to RimaCon. Had a good time. I seem to have a thing about getting flat tires there. And so I didn't get a flat tire while I was supporting the ride, but when I got home and I pulled my bike out of the back of the car, my rear wheel was flat. So I probably flattened it on, there was a section just before the end or the very, it was like the beginning of my leg, which ended up being the end of my ride because of the fact that I rode back to where my car was. But there was a section of trap rock, which was, I mean, we're talking big trap rock. We're talking leftovers from when the rail line was down or whatever was going through there. But it was messy, and there were deep puddles and lots of trap rock, and it was sort of entertaining. But sharp edges on trap rock tends to pinch your tires, tends to pinch things, can be a problem. So, and it was a problem apparently, because I haven't checked why I got that flat tire, but maybe I'll report back on that next week. But anyway, it happened. Let's go back to our little talk here about, looking at my time up there, Fran, how am I looking? I'm okay. So, 20 car-free cities, or 20 car-free places in America. Funny, it's on bobvila.com. Bob Vila. Yeah, remember the guy, Bob Vila? He was the house guy on This Old House, I think, is where he was on public TV. So it says here, if you're sick of your gas guzzler, maybe it's time to head off to one of these stateside locales where cars rarely, if ever, make an appearance. Click through to hitch a virtual ride in these 20 places where automobiles are either unwelcome or unusable. Okay, so we're going to start with Halibut Cove, Alaska. Located in the northern reaches of Alaska's Kachemak Bay State Park, this little-known, sparsely populated island retreat is as perfect for fishing and hiking as it is for admiring the quaint local galleries. You don't need a car to enjoy these wonders, both natural and man-made. In fact, town transportation is limited to walking, boating, and ATVs. I'll bet they allow bikes. They probably allow bikes. So, Mackinac Island, Michigan. Setting foot on this island, notice that these are lots of islands you're going to see. On this island in Lake Huron is practically like going back in time to the 19th century. So abundant, there are horse-drawn carriages to the quaint period architecture and the natural beauty of the island. It's easy to see why 3.8-mile square community is designated National Historic Landmark. Monhegan, Maine. Okay, it may host the second tallest lighthouse in Maine, but for solitude speakers, Monhegan's biggest draw may be its car-free status. True to its name, which has been derived from the Algonquin word for out-to-sea island, again, another island, you'll need to park your car at a port and then take a boat over to reach the 69-person town. Fire Island, New York. New Yorkers take a 15-minute ferry ride across the Great South Bay to this locale on Long Island's South Shore. And it has 31 communities on the car-free island, has its own unique draw. So, again, you don't want cars. This is where you go. Bald Head Island, North Carolina. Again, it's all islands. 20-minute ferry ride to a golf cart community. There will be no whirring of engines, honking of horns to contend with as you hike, kayak, or snap selfies with the island's abundant sea turtle population. I'm going to say, Mr. Vila, you're not being real bicycle-friendly here on this site because I haven't heard anyone talk about bicycles there, and it seems like bikes would be perfect there. But who knows? Maybe there's a ban. That's interesting. Someone should check that out. Sandwiched between, this is Russell Island, Michigan. And this sandwich between Algonac and Walpole Island. It's a private island filled with small town charms. And again, another one. It's all islands. Tangier Island in Virginia. Another island. No cars. Supai, Arizona. Supai, Arizona. Interesting. A dream that there can't be an island in Arizona, can there? Okay, a dream destination for lovers of desert scapes. Supai is so remote that mail is still delivered by mule to the 208-person community in the Grand Canyon. There you go. Because the nearest road is 8 miles from town, you can rest assured that your view of Supai's mesmerizing gorges and waterfalls won't be impeded by automobiles. Phantom Ranch in Arizona. Peace and quiet, 100 nature-loving souls who dwell this Grand Canyon National Park Village. These are all around the Grand Canyon, it looks like, which is sort of an island in itself, especially if you've ever been to the northern tip of the Grand Canyon. Ye are in the middle of nowhere, very much so. This is Arcasanti, Arizona, and this is an Italian village conceived of and began construction on this experimental settlement, encouraged environmental friendly living. As a result, the 100-person car-free town with an organic layout is intended to foster a high degree of social interaction between residents while still protecting their privacy. Yeah. You know, social interaction, that thing that people used to do before they had a cell phone.
Yeah.
Anyway, and social media, as they call it. Is that what they call it? I think that's what they call it.
Maybe it should be called anti-social
media. Anti-social media. That's good. I like that.
Yeah.
You heard it here first, folks. Right. Probably. Catalina Island in California.
Right.
I've been to Catalina Island, actually.
You have?
Yeah, I have. Oh, I have. I have. It was on a, it was a Haro bicycle sales trip that was involving a, we got on a cruise ship and we, first stop was Catalina Island.
No kidding.
Yep, that's it. So anyway, Catalina Island, there's another one. I'm Beaver River, New York. The 8 permanent residents of this town, not bigger than much of a half mile in all, are true adherents to a minimalist lifestyle. Beaver River is accessible by foot, boat, electric, rail, snowmobile, or skis, as there is no electricity. So much for your e-bike. Okay. Anyway. Isle Royale, Michigan. Another one. It's Isle Royale National Park. And it's, again, it lacks both roads and permanent residents, but the town's car-free status isn't a point of contention with visitors who come to enjoy hiking and the friendly island. And Governor's Island in New York, and that is accessible by way of ferries from Manhattan to Brooklyn, and it permits only the occasional car, bus, minibus, or electric golf cart, requiring visitors to get around on foot or bike instead. Finally, someone says bike. And that will be in New York, Governor's Island. Very, very nice. And Rock Island in Wisconsin. It goes on and on and on. We have so many on the list. How are we doing for time? We're doing okay. Again, mostly islands, but there are places you can go and you can just, like, you know, live without your car, which is kind of cool. Now, if you go out to a place like around here, you go to Nantucket Island, they do allow cars there, but it's real easy to get around in Nantucket on a bicycle. Also on Martha's Vineyard, again, real easy to get around. They are islands. If you're looking for an island that has a fair amount of mileage that you can ride, Martha's Vineyard definitely is large enough to get in a 100K ride if you need to. So, and half, you know, many of the places out there are bike paths, and, you know, bikes are very, very apparent out there. So you're pretty safe when you're riding out there too, I think, anyway. You do have to watch out for the mopeds. They tend to be a little crazy. You think they would restrict it to a certain degree. Maybe they'll restrict it to just electric mopeds. Hey, there's an idea. We'll see. We don't really know. Branson, Missouri has a place called Branson Landing, and it appears to be tourists can drive to Branson in pursuit of good times at Dolly Parton's Stampede, but Branson Landing, a pedestrian-friendly lakefront boardwalk, is one spot you won't find vehicles. That's not really fair. That's not, like, totally carpet. Venice Canal, Historic District, Venice, California. If you've never been to Venice, California,
nope.
That's a sight to see. I'll just leave it at that. It's not Venice, Florida. It is Venice, California. They are entirely different than one another. But it is certainly a spectacle. It's a very interesting place. Colonial Williamsburg in Williamsburg, Virginia. That's on land. 173 acres of reconstructed buildings from the 17th and 18th century and 19th century to maintain a sense of authenticity. No automobiles are allowed on the grounds during the day. But when you won't encounter cars on the streets, you probably run into your fair share of costumed locals eager to converse with you in period accent. That's it. That's what Bob Vila says about places that are car-free, and there are 20 different places. Thought it might be a fun thing to share, something a little different for Bicycle Talk, but, you know, you can ride a bike there, I think. Again, you might want to check with local authorities before going there, or you might just want to find a place like Northeastern Connecticut, where we live, where there aren't that many cars. We don't have a lot of cars here. It's quite nice. We do have cars, don't get me wrong. And we do have people that are not bicycle friendly. Don't get me wrong there either. But it's a little more pleasant than it can be in other places, just so you know. All right, so I had mentioned earlier that the U.S. auto industry doesn't have a supply problem. It has a demand problem. Yeah, yeah. This is actually, you know, I see things like this and I go, you know, I'm not really, you know, pointed at talking about cars as much, but I do talk about cars a lot on this show. And the reason why is because they influence a lot of the things that happen on bicycles. That we're both wheeled vehicles. We both have to obey the local laws, or at least in most states, that's the way it works. And we both have to share equally the space of which we are riding and or driving on. So there's a lot of similarities. The difference is there's a whole lot more cars than there are bicycles. Now we get to the good side of that. The U.S. auto industry doesn't have a supply problem, it has a demand problem. So CEOs are still lamenting supply constraints, but the fact is the market's fundamental economics have turned very sour. So the vehicle market that's been going through a significant transformation since last June, starting in the third quarter of 2022, the demand supply structure of the market moved from a supply shortage to a serious demand problem, and it has marketing teams scrambling to fix it. The vehicle market has been supply constrained over the past 2 years, not new information because of, you know, we had the COVID thing, we had, you know, we have all sorts of things. But the big thing that we have, memo to the board of directors, those days are over. There are certainly pockets of supply constraints when looking at specific models. And the level of inventory is not ideal for consumers who want to roam the lots for the right vehicle and haggle on the price. However, these minor supply problems are now overwhelmed by this fact that fundamental economics driving the vehicle market have turned very sour. Rising rates, slowed growth, economic growth has faltered in the U.S., and gross domestic product declined over the first two quarters. This is up this year. The only hope is for an increase in light vehicle sales this year is if a significant number of customers come to the dealer and buy what they ordered last year. That prospect seems difficult to imagine, especially if they were betting on a good price for their used vehicle. Yeah, inventory up and sales are languishing. Here's what's going on. The numbers are out there. There are less people that are demanding cars, new cars. More people are demanding used cars. I thought I heard or read somewhere. But anyway, that's what's going on with the auto industry. I look at this as less cars, less congestion, less products on the road, really, really good things. And then we go on to, you know, other things like the bicycles, and they're really struggling this year too, just so you know. There's a lot of supply and not a lot of demand. There's a lot of dealers that are now overstocked because they feared not having product like they did during the COVID years, and so they're a little overstocked. The suppliers are very overstocked. This might be the year to buy a bike, folks. It could be. If you've been thinking about a new bike and you're looking for a great deal, go down to your local bike shop and have a conversation, because I think that time has come. So, and we won't even get into the e-bike equation on this, because I'm going to save that for next week, because there's all sorts of e-bike stuff that's going on here too. And that is that there's a growing number of global sales, and it means that there's going to be more and more e-bikes on the streets worldwide. Therefore, by 2023, right now, it's expected the total number of electric bikes in circulation around the world will reach 300 million. That's a 50% increase compared to 2019's 200 million. So what does it mean? I'll tell you what it means. It means people are buying e-bikes, but they're not buying cars. Is this interesting? The e-bikes are a lot less expensive, and they'll get you wherever you need to go. And you don't really need to be super fit to do it. You can be fit enough to do it, and you can certainly gain fitness from it. But you don't have to be super fit. So that's a good thing. That's a really good thing. I'm going to end the show now with going into events, and I'm going to mention, of course, the ongoing bicycle game on the early history of bicycles in Hartford, Connecticut, and that is at 1 Elizabeth Street at the Hartford Historical Society, not the Hartford, the State Historical Society, and check it out. It's kind of cool. This tour that's coming up is the Tour Apocum. And it is in Brimfield, Massachusetts. You can register for it on Bike Reg. We were told by our friend and listener Peter about this earlier in the show. And it's the Apocum Land Trust, Sunday, September 17th, 2023, for a spectacular scenic bike ride through several of their conservation properties in Brimfield. And that is that does have a 99-mile ride in it, too. There are a number of different rides you can go on, even down to a 9-mile ride. So it's kind of interesting, and you might want to check that out. On Saturday, September 30th, the Charter Oak Manchester, Connecticut Rotary in Motion is taking place. And that is a free event, and you can find out more about that at www.manchesterrotary.org. Finishing points. All right. Don't forget about the bicycle game at the Connecticut Historical Society. Watch for that bike. School is back in session really soon. Some schools started today. I think E.O. Smith started today, by the way.
Oh.
And I know that UConn started today because I have a UConn law professor who takes my spin class, and he said it was his first day of classes today. So anyway, keep your eyes open on that. Is the auto industry really going to have a big surprise when people move to cities and find out more about e-bikes? I hope so. We can hope, I said right here. Turbulent start to the 2023 Vuelta. Oh, boy. Do you have a story to share about riding in the rain? I'd love to hear it. And we do love those comments, so please keep them coming. Remember, cyclocross season is coming soon. I'll talk more about that in future episodes. I'll say it again. It won't be my last time. Get loud. Get active. Our time has come. Stop complaining about traffic, dangerous roads, the price of gas, the lack of places to ride, and join the revolution of change. Hey, take a day. Park that car or truck. Ride your bike instead. You might just surprise yourself. The views expressed in this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. You've been listening to Bicycle Talk with my friendly co-host, the lovely Dr. Fran Storch, who's sitting over here to my side if you're watching a video.
Yeah.
If you've been listening to this on Facebook Live, the Bicycle Talk Facebook page, or on a podcast, and you'd like to comment, drop me an email, bicycletalk@gmail.com. No, bicycletalk@gmail.com. So anyway, you can listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, or now on my Bicycle Talk YouTube channel. This is Pedalin' Ron. Remember, keep the rubber side down, the wind at your back. Get out and ride your bike. It really could save your life. This is 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores, and WHUS.org. Thank you so much for listening. See you next week.